RealHouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Good morning and welcome. This is Brian Vickers, Firehouse.com, contributing editor for funding and grants, and we're joined today by Tommy Abercrombie of Abercrombie Planning and Design, architectural firm specializing in fire stations and consulting on their design, placement, etc. And good morning, Tommy. Welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Already did post an article out there on Firehouse.com about the grant side of the fire station construction grant that's now in the works. It actually opened yesterday, June 11th. The application did online and it goes through July 10th. So it does resemble the traditional AFG grants, AFG Safer and Fire Prevention. As far as the setup, it is the same login that most people have been using for that. And the article did cover a lot of what people want to look for and what the grant might be looking for as high points. But a lot of the questions I've been receiving, as a lot of other people have had, is related to the construction process and some of the requirements that they have in there, which, of course, is why we brought Tommy on board, because he does deal with that. So, Tommy, a lot of people were surprised by this program. It did come out. They more or less announced it as part of the stimulus package in February and said, it's coming. We're going to have one. But it kind of left, I mean, most of the fire departments in this country are dealing with, you know, equipment and vehicles and things like that, and the stations either are already part of a capital improvement that gets handled by the local municipality, or they've got a long-range plan, or they're just too broke and it's never even a forethought, you know, to be even coming up to that point. So here we are. They put the guidelines out 2 weeks ago with a lot of things that people don't understand. When people start to think about building the station, what kind of timeline are we talking about, even just the prep point, you know, as far as getting a hold of someone and maybe thinking about what they want to do and the site selection and drawings and things along those lines?
Well, you know, it's interesting that a lot of this is really dependent on whether we're trying to replace something or if they're expanding, and you get into a lot of situations where just the location of the land is a difficult part of the process. And in different cities, you're going to have different demands on the available land, and that needs to fit in with where you need stations located. So that piece of it alone can be one of the longer pieces of the process. It also can be one of the places where you can make a lot of mistakes. You know, ultimately, building a new station, you should be considering response times and coverage areas and things like that. And so that juggling act can increase the time that it takes to get started considerably. Now, if it's replacing an existing station or modifying, certainly those things can happen quicker in there. Typically, you would find that the process of finding a site, making sure that it meets in with the zoning requirements of the area and response times, generally takes from 3 to 6 months if you're on a fast-tracked system in that. And, you know, a lot of times people may have, like you mentioned earlier, they've already got a site in mind, they wanted to do it a long time, just haven't been able to make that happen. Those kind of situations can happen much quicker, obviously. But it really depends on where they are in the process, whether they've been thinking about this ahead of time. One of the things that I would caution anyone who is considering applying for the grant is to make sure that their desire to get those things done quickly doesn't put them in a situation that they're making a large investment in something that's not going to work for them. So I don't discourage them from doing it, but I think that's one part of the process that they really need to think about up front. Are we looking at a site that's going to work for us long time? You mentioned earlier that these type of things don't come along very often, and I think that's really important for us to remember. This station, if it was selected, is likely to be there a lot of years. And so I think it's important that even though we encourage them to move quickly, that they keep in mind that long-term, this is an investment that everyone's going to have to be comfortable with for many, many years.
As far as site selection and, you know, what possibly can be done at the same time, I know they certainly would like to see people with plans in hand, but I mean the actual full blown architect and construction drawings and many copies of blueprints and corrections obviously is a significant cost as well that a lot of departments can't take on. How much can actually be done at the same time as far as looking for land? Because as you know, they mentioned between stormwater runoff and soil samples and things like that. Somebody may have a site in mind, and of course, compared to the two of them, one may not have the runoff. And obviously, the design of buildings, and how much parking lot you can have, and how much of the the actual coverage you can have of the impervious structure, concrete and things like that on top of it are going to vary. People can also get themselves in trouble by trying to do a lot of that at the same time, can't they? Because the each piece of land is possibly going to be different about what type of station could be put on it.
Yes, and the interesting thing about this, one side of us, I think we agree that that the opportunity is unique and needs to happen quickly. But the other side is that we have to be cognizant of the things that you just mentioned, that there are so many elements that come into play. Even a site that may eventually seem ideal from response time, location, it looks like it's a level building site, and then the process of actually beginning the design and looking at the utilities and doing samples of the soil and those kind of things can very quickly get you into a situation where you have unexpected problems with the site, and some of those may be severe enough that it makes the site not a viable opportunity for you. And where people can get in trouble with trying to do things all simultaneously, the design's already started, they're working, looking, investigating the site itself, doing some core samples and things like that, then suddenly a problem comes up and you're halfway into the design process. And that's where you really start getting into the nightmares of added cost and expenses that you didn't anticipate. That gets magnified then if you're going into a grant process where you've already committed to a certain amount of money that you think you need, and now you're doubling that because your site changed or something. That those are the kind of things that you really have to be careful about. And I think that's where again the process can speed up by doing these things simultaneously. And a lot of times people even fast track things where they're doing dirt work on a site while the design's still in the process, and some of them work out great. Again, the risk you're taking there is those unknowns, and really there can be considerable on that. There's some sites that may be enough information is available to people in the area, previous surveys, those type of things that may make the risk much less. And those are the kind that there's probably more of an opportunity to move quickly on those things without as much risk. But the sites that are, haven't been explored, there's no recent data on them, that can be a risky proposition in that you may get into situations. You mentioned parking, and we talk about response. We've seen sites where everything looked great on the site, and they realized that there wasn't enough approach to get out onto a busy highway, and then you find out that the highway department won't allow a certain number of entrances close together, and just little examples like that can derail a process that now may have been going on for a couple of months. So it's again, I'm not saying that people don't fast track these and there's not opportunities for that, but I think you have to be selective about, do we have a history on this? You mentioned long-term plans. A lot of places may have said, we know we need a station within a couple of blocks from here. And we know that this site has been recently surveyed by the city. And those are the kind of things that I think, especially in this grant process, are ones that you could make happen quickly. You talked about architects and engineer fees. One of the things that I think would probably be beneficial to people who don't already have a set of plans waiting that we're interested in moving forward this grant is to at least try to invest in, a conceptual plan, which could be done much less expensively, that would show, look, we've studied, we know we need a station in this area. We've got a site that we feel very comfortable with, and here's conceptually what this would look like. And as you mentioned, then there's that recognition that money for the actual design is usually not there either, just like the money for the station is not there. So you know, those are some things that I think would be wise if people, you know, really had an idea that they had a station need in a certain part of town or a certain area, and that kind of thing would be a pretty good risk to take in that.
Yes, and just to mention, the at least if people can afford a concept drawing, any engineering fees or architect fees that would be necessary for construction are eligible in the grant itself to be paid after the grant's awarded. So certainly nobody's going to be, if you can't afford it, certainly don't go out and do it.
Right.
Because it is probably going to be the most competitive grant there is, certainly in terms of AFG, if not the federal government as a whole. So those fees won't have to come locally. They can, for anybody that's applying, you can hold off on the big sets of drawings and blueprints until afterwards, and then spend it if funded.
And that could be a significant piece of, you know, that, like you mentioned earlier, that not having the ability to fund that, that can be a considerable amount of the budget that comes in there. And so it is probably unwise, even without a grant process, to take on designs when you don't have any idea how you're going to fund the actual construction, because you're taking on a considerable piece of money there that you, you know, that many things may change before you actually get construction money in there. So
definitely. So, in terms of the design of the building, there's probably a lot of new. A lot of people are seeing some things they haven't, like the leadership and energy and environmental design rating system, the LEED rating system, that probably hadn't been real. It's not really new in terms of construction in general, but of course, fire stations don't get built, but you know, once every 30, 40, 50 years or thereabouts. So a lot of people have never been involved with anything in terms of major construction funded by the federal government, where LEED is more or less required, versus a lot of people in the more rural and suburban areas that are building basic steel buildings. This is certainly a semi-confusing system, and as I was having a conversation with an architect yesterday, of course, a lot of the LEED up front in design is more or less of a guess. It's a checklist that gets done after the building is built to make sure that what was designed actually came out and works the way it does. But can you give us a little bit of information about what LEED is and what the certainly, you know, energy and conservation design are the goals, but what sort of components are involved in that, and what can that certainly, we can guess it adds a little expense to the short-term expense to the grant, but again, we're talking about a station that's going to be there for 50, 75 years, so what sort of things go into the LEED system and ratings?
Yes. Well, one of the interesting things about LEED is you know, part of the initial upfront added cost is that to get certified by LEED, as a LEED certified building, you have to pay a third party to evaluate. You said after the building's done, you know, you go into the design with a series of things that you believe will get points toward that certification, and you send off that certification, and then it's evaluated, and you. They determine whether it's LEED certified after the building has been completed, and that adds a lot of extra costs in there. It's one of the negatives, quite frankly, to the LEED process, is because the things that you do, you should be doing anyway, but then you pay somebody to verify that you're doing them. The reality of that is, though, that it has become you know, the badge that says we've done those things and we merit you know, being notice for that effort, and that's a big part of the grant process. It's a big part of all federal buildings now. The LEED process itself is based on the idea that, you know, we need to be smarter about the way we build buildings. And you mentioned some of the older fire stations. You know, we used to use a lot of the processes that we're going back to when we built fire stations, because we would source things from local areas. You know, you see these the character of some old stations, and you see rock that's been sourced from a local quarry, and they have been positioned when they didn't have air conditioner to take advantage of the sun and the wind and those type of things. And we lost that as we moved into being able to air condition anything or heat anything. And So really, LEED does a lot of taking us back to where we used to be out of necessity. But some of the things that you do with LEED, you know, I think there are important things that even if it wasn't part of the grant or wasn't part of the process of being moved up in that, you know, the point system, I think they're the right thing to do for a department long term, because if done properly, they are good for the environment. They're also good for the health of the firefighters. You know, a lot of LEED talks about using carpets that don't have adhesives that put off toxic chemicals, and paints that are low VOC paints, things that really improve the air quality. And you're talking about people living in these stations long term. And, you know, part of our macho nature of the fire service, we didn't care much about those things, just like the vent systems in stations. You know, initially they didn't catch on quickly because firefighters, I'm not worried about that. You know, I can take that. And these kind of things are recognizing that this is someone's home. They're being exposed to enough things already, and long-term, these things improve the air quality tremendously in there, as well as helping the environment. So it goes beyond just the environmental issues. It goes into the health process as well. But some of the things will eventually pay off for the departments in that they'll reduce the amount of expense that they have on heating and cooling, you know, the energy cost, the long-term maintenance. You know, LEED is really designed to address all those things. And, you know, some of the key components would be using materials, like you said, that come locally, that we're not transporting, you know, products from Italy to put inside the station, looking at energy efficiency. Some of that, there's points that are as simple as just placing the station on the site where it takes advantage of the wind and the sun. And again, things that early on, you know, people built out of necessity, and we lost that. But there are things that make a dramatic difference, and that can go as far into, you know, there's stations being built right now that have rain harvesting systems, and they recycle all that water, and that becomes the source of all of the irrigation for their plants. That you get points for using hardy native plants that don't require a lot of water. So, you know, again, it really is beyond the point. It's the right thing to do, and even, you know, there's points for being respectful of the local area. And I think some of what we've seen in fire stations that happened in the 70s and 80s is that they were all about just plopping down something there. They didn't have much character, and really we lost a little bit of what was important. You know, the firehouse is an American symbol, and I think it's important that we remember that as we move forward. And that a lot of these things, you know, even come into play in the LEED system, because it's about respecting wherever you are. The fire station that we build in Texas would clearly have different needs than what would be built in New York or, you know, somewhere on the West Coast. And the latest versions of LEED are even more respectful and more points given for regional differences. Early on in the LEED system, you know, there wasn't as much recognition that everybody's going to have a little different environment that they need to address. And the newer version of LEED has regional differences, and it allows people to smartly build in their region. So,
now you mentioned taking advantage of the wind and the sun and the in the region, and you know, one of the things I've mentioned in workshops I've taught and other articles and other podcasts is, you know, other opportunities for quote unquote creating money, which money saved is money earned, going all the way back to, you know, Ben Franklin's statement along those lines. You know, harnessing wind and solar power. You know, I always tell people, hey, if we can reduce the utility bills in one area through, you know, better insulation, better design, or even alternative energy sources on the station, that obviously reduces monthly utility bills, which frees up money that can go other places. And that is one thing that we do have within this grant that they're looking for, is possibly alternative energy sources. About how much cost, I mean, are we looking at for maybe, you know, the average set of solar panels, or, you know, even some of the windmills? I remember seeing a Discovery Channel about a real small one Jay Leno had on his you know, little windmill he had on his little toy garage there for providing backup power. It was maybe 5 foot tall and not even a foot in diameter, and I forget, it was running a couple kW. What sort of added cost is that going to put on possibly a station? But, of course, I mean, it's going to save utility bills over the long term, but up front, what kind of things should people be thinking about if that's in the back of their mind to add to the station?
Well, you know, you can range anywhere from 15% to 35% additional cost, depending on how far you go on that, on the upfront cost. But you know, the point you bring up about the long term is significant. I think, especially in the grant environment, historically, even when people build fire stations off of bonds, you know, that in the end seems very difficult up front, but becomes the hard, the easiest part of the whole process, because they get the bond money, everything's built, and then, you know, everyone walks away, and the department has to sustain this, you know, the utilities and the maintenance and those kind of things, and typically those things aren't thought of up front and aren't allowed for in bond issues and things. And same thing with the grant. You know, if you are fortunate enough to get the grant, you know, you're still going to have to operate that facility and sustain it for the long haul after that. And most cases, that's going to be an additional cost. So if you're able to incorporate, let's say we add 25% to the cost of the building up front, and that includes solar or geothermal or you know, windmill or something like that, you really need to look at, you know, how that comes back to you as a department, and especially in the grant environment, in that, you know, that's, if you get approved, that stuff will be paid for, then your long-term commitment is reduced, and it can be significant in there. The key to me in that, and I think this is important that we get out there to everyone, you know, there's many different ideas out there about how we can do these things. You know, some people promote solar, some promote wind, and these work, you know, differently in different locations, and not every location is going to be ideal for any one idea in that. But the important thing is that if they look at adding these elements to their station, they need to make sure that they're going with things that are proven concepts, that they have history, that they can see that they worked in there. You know, a lot of the movement when we initially started all racing to get LEED certification for buildings was on trying out all these new things that may or may not end up working in the end. And there's a lot of that in the market right now. There's a lot of concepts that are being tried. There's a lot of promising ideas, and we just don't have enough data to verify that that's a good investment. And so I think as they're looking at adding those pieces to their stations, look to the things. You know, solar has become much less expensive. It's much more reliable. And in the right environment, you know, it can be an incredible asset long-term in there. Those are things that we have good data on now, and we know they're working. And, you know, the geothermal energy has become a pretty significant and pretty easy way to add you know, green features to the building, and then also save long term on you know, their heating and cooling bills. And so I think that what they should be looking for is not to try to be the trendiest fire station in town, but try to look for the things that have a proven track record, because you could very easily get into a situation as an early adopter to something that the maintenance cost or replacement cost became prohibitive, and I don't think that benefits anyone long term.
Definitely. Now, most of this has been talking about you know, building from scratch, and certainly renovation is eligible as well. That kind of brings its own nightmares in and of itself. You know, my wife and I have, you know, bought some houses that were older and needed a little work, and you always get there and get your plan out, and then you pull some drywall and find a few surprises about where the pipes were supposed to be and how things were. What are some of the pitfalls people tend to run into when they look at renovations and try and jump too quickly? Is, you know, maybe older wiring, or, you know, plumbing not big enough, or, you know, just retrofits that aren't structurally possible? People run into a lot of those. What have you seen in that realm as far as renovation goes?
Well, the interesting thing about it, our discussion about the environmentally friendly is that you know, still the most environmentally friendly thing that you can do is not build. And we just say that in that the next most environmentally friendly thing you can do is to reuse or improve on existing structures if they are capable of doing that. So, you know, I went back to talked a little bit about some of the stations that were built in the 70s and 80s in a lot of cities that didn't have much character and were thrown together with cheap materials and are already in need of replacement. You know, those are the kind of facilities that really you don't benefit from saving most of those. But there's a lot of stations out there that have been in place for a long time that were built with high-quality materials, a lot of craftsmanship in them, have a lot of history, that are really, for many reasons, both historical preservation and then the reduced impact to the environment and this cost savings, can be great options when you're looking to redo the station in there. Again, you bring up what we all worry about in those, and what many times leads people to not do this, is they're afraid that once we get into these things, you know, we're going to have so many nightmares. You mentioned the wiring. You know, asbestos is a big problem in old buildings. Structurally, maybe not able to support the size. You know, the apparatus have grown in size, and the equipment demands have grown so much that, you know, a lot of times maybe the site just won't accommodate the larger apparatus or the increased number of people that are in there. You know, you start adding showers and sleeping areas and things like that, then it can very quickly become problematic to fit that into an existing space you have available from space in there. All that said, it's relatively easy. It doesn't eliminate the chances of those surprises, but it's relatively easy, and I would suggest that anyone considering that, they get an architect or an engineer in and let them, you know, in a day they could spend time looking at the structure and the systems and give you a pretty good idea of whether this is something that's a viable option. And most of that's going to come down to, is it structurally capable of withstanding what you're attempting to do, whether that be adding a floor to it or adding more bays? Does the site allow for that? Or, you know, we talked about code issues earlier. If we add three more bays and another company of people to the station, now do we exceed the parking requirements and those kind of things? And even in that context, there's a lot more leeway. If a building is determined to have historical value, there's a lot more leeway in how you can work with the codes and things to preserve that building. But I think that would be the first effort. And personally, I think if there's any chance, if a station is you know, of any kind of significance to the community at all, of salvaging that, then I think that's a first step that everyone should take when they go through that. The fire service has lost a lot of great buildings that now we look back and see them used by other people in great ways, but that we lost a lot of our history and character in our rush to just tear things down or move into bigger spaces. And it can be, it can appear to be more difficult to work within the restraints of an existing building, but really that can also be an exciting time. It's exciting. A good designer will be excited by the challenge, will be excited about preserving a building. It can become a significant thing to your community. All that, again, is not even something to consider if structurally the building, you know, we talk about good bones in a building, and if the building was done low budget to start with, you know, the materials were shoddy, you know, it's not working, certainly it's not worth it. The other thing that you run into, and I think this is part of the grant and the refurbishing and some of the points that they'll give for places, you know, a lot of stations out there have mold, they've had years of neglect, or the walls are full of mold. You know, they're a health hazard to the firefighters. Those are the kind of people that I would suggest jumping on this grant, because those are compelling stories, because that's been neglected for way too long, and really is an impact on the people that are using those. So, you know, again, I think renovation is something that is very appropriate, very viable, can save a lot of money in the end. You already got the slab. You've already got good structure. You've got a lot of the plumbing coming in, and certainly there's some pitfalls. But I think those can be very easily overcome by getting someone in there early. You're not talking about a lot of expense. You're just having somebody look at that and see if it's viable. The other thing about that is that I think once you do that, it really kind of helps you clarify, you know, what are the possibilities for this station? Is this something that we can grow with? You don't want to renovate a station and 5 years later realize you need another bay or something like that. So, that's a really key point to bring in someone early on that situation.
Well, it certainly gives us a lot of good information there. Hopefully everybody picks up some out of that, and certainly clarified a lot of the question marks that a lot of us have that aren't in the business, which is, of course, our goal of these podcasts, is to bring the experts in and listen to them and let them explain everything. I want to thank you for coming, Tommy, and sharing your expertise here, and hopefully be safe, because you're up with Fort Worth, correct?
Fort Worth, yes, Fort Worth Fire Department.
Okay. So, but I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank Tommy again for coming, and good luck, everyone, with these grants.
Thank you.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.